This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Hello! You're listening to Animal Party on Pet Life Radio, and it's a two-cat party today. I have Peach in my inbox, and I have Ming Ming messing with my microphone, so you might hear meows. And we've got Dr. Fox, Carly Fox. Dr. Fox from Schwarzman Animal Medical Center, where they do a lot of good work in New York City. They take care of the police dogs and the seeing eye dogs and, oh, dogs who can't afford it and all kinds of dogs and cats. And she does animal emergencies. So we're privileged to have you on the show again, Dr. Fox. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's my pleasure to be here again.
Well, last time you were on, we kind of touched on a few things that I sort of wanted to follow up on. And you talked about how your clinic has everything that a vet would need to diagnose, and that if you didn't have it, you'd be getting it soon. So I want to ask you about lasers, because I've noticed that, you know, in the last 10 years or so, it's advertised a lot as laser instead of scalpel, but also a different kind of laser for healing. What's going on with the lasers?
We use lasers here for a bunch of different things. We have an integrative rehab service. So it's like, in addition to our orthopedic surgeons and people that deal with, you know, doing surgery on animals for orthopedic disease, we actually have a rehab department, like a sports medicine department, that I think they use probably the most lasers in the hospital. And they use it for a bunch of different reasons, such as, you know, pain management for arthritis, intervertebral disc disease, degenerative joint disease, even soft tissue injury like sprains. And then also we use it a lot for post-surgical recovery. So lasers can help heal like soft tissue trauma and orthopedic repairs like TPLOs for craniocruciate ligament repairs, et cetera. So there's like tons of use for lasers in veterinary medicine, just like in human medicine. But I would say that department uses it more than any other because they are also seeing these patients chronically. So I would feel like laser therapy is something that is not like a one-time use, oh, now you're fixed. It's something that needs to be done in over time.
Does it help elderly dogs with their stiff, sore joints and aches and pains?
Yeah, 1,000%. Yeah, so our rehab service sees lots of elderly dogs with mobility issues and helps them retain their muscle mass and allows them to go on being more comfortable and ambulatory for as long as possible. My own dog went there for many years prior to his passing, and they're really wonderful. They do exercises with him. He walked on the underwater treadmill. He got laser therapy. He got acupuncture.
What kind of dog was he?
He was a French bulldog.
I'm just imagining him with like cucumbers on his eyes and a little bandana on his head.
They used to send me pictures. I'd be downstairs in the emergency room and he, you know, our hospital has right now, it's actually getting renovated and we're going to have 9 floors. But at the time it had 8 floors and rehab's on the 8th floor. They would send me pictures from the 8th floor of him like in the water treadmill, getting dried off afterwards, getting a massage.
That's the life.
I know. But it really, really helped him. And I could see a noticeable difference in his like walks outside and his, you know, ability to get on and off furniture and just his comfort as he aged and eventually, you know, came to the end of his life. But they were amazing. And I know that they rely a lot on lasers to help with that, along with other things.
Okay, so I'm just going to throw this in for listeners because just kind of touched on it without talking about it. Most of the time, when you've got those long back dogs, but any little dog, they get injured jumping down from things. And if you lift your dog up on something, then he has to figure out how to get off it. So if he's too old to get up on the bed and you lift him up there, he used to go up all the time, but you lifted him up, you got to lift him down because that's when they get injured. And those Dachshunds and Bassets, they really don't do well with the jump down, right?
Yeah, I mean, those dogs that you're describing are they're called chondrodystrophic dogs. So these are dogs that are sort of longer than they are tall, like Dachshunds are the poster children for this, as well as Bassett. Even Pug can have this problem, French Bulldogs as well. They're very prone to a disease called intervertebral disc disease, where the discs that live between their vertebrae can age and become less like squishy, if you will. And because of that and the loss of that, like the water inside of them, they can move just like people who, you know, quote unquote, slip a disc or they have disc disease. they are more prone to that because of their body conformation. And if they have a jump off a bed, just what seems like a normal dog activity, they can herniate or slip a disc more likely than if it was like a healthy three-year-old Labrador retriever, for example. And because of that, I'm always very honest and cautious with these owners that have these dogs, that they really need to be very aware that that's a problem that it's very likely that their dog will face throughout their life, even if they just are acting abnormal one day, not themselves, seemingly uncomfortable, or they don't want to go for a walk or don't want to go up the stairs. That could be like the first sign that they're uncomfortable, and most likely it's a disc that's herniated and just bumping up against the spinal cord and causing a little bit of discomfort. But there's definitely very varying degrees of that. That would be like the least concerning thing, is just pain, and then it can progress to having trouble walking and or even becoming non-ambulatory and potentially needing neurosurgery to remove that disc material. So there's definitely varying degrees, and I see those dogs every single day. And luckily, if you catch it early enough, you can institute a period of rest and pain medication that can make them feel better and fix them for a period of time. And even if they come in and they're not able to walk, a lot of the time surgery can also fix them. So there's definitely options for those animals. It's just all about recognizing their discomfort and bringing them in for evaluation.
And just to prevent injury, you can teach your dogs to use ramps, to use a stool to get up on something, to make it a habit so that, you know, they won't be jumping up and down the things they used to be able to do or things that are just beyond their reach, and just being mindful of it. Okay, so we're going to go to break and come back. I want to ask you about supplements, because there's been a lot of new supplements. It seems like when I go on Amazon, where you can find good ramps, by the way, really easy, portable, cheap ones that'll make your dog's life easier. But when I go on Amazon and I type in dog ramp or something like that, I end up with like a page and a half of supplements. And today I did a product test. I took a cookie, dog cookie, and a NutriVet hip and joint vitamin, and I put each one down, and I had each dog, two old dogs, because they both need both, see which they like better. And they actually preferred the vitamin. So if you want to see that, go to Deb Wolf, Pet Expert on YouTube, and check it out. All right, we're going to go to break and come back and talk about supplements. Do they work? Is it true that you should give your dog turmeric or cinnamon, or what's going on with all that? We'll be back with Dr. Fox after the break. Stay tuned to Animal Party on Pet Life Radio.
You know the expression, cats have nine lives. Well, what if you can give them one more? The Give Them 10 movement is on a mission to help give cats an extra life. How? With spay and neuter. Spaying or neutering your cat helps them live a longer, healthier life. And it helps control free-roaming cat populations too. Learn more about the benefits of spay and neuter and meet Scooter, the neutered cat, at givethem10.org. That's givethem10.org.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Hello! You're back on Animal Party Pet Life Radio with me, Deb Wolf, and we're talking to Dr. Fox. And I'd like to know about supplements. What do you think? Does this stuff work?
It depends what type of supplement it is and what is the use case for it. I'm not big on recommending most supplements. I think the ones that I do recommend are pretty limited to like joint disease in dogs and cats. So, and then also I've been recommending CBD as well.
Oh, are you? Okay. Yeah.
Yes.
So that's from cannabis, but it doesn't get the dog high or the cat high. It just is pain relief?
Yeah. So there's been a bunch of research actually, which is, so I mean, most of my recommendations are going to be based on actual papers and research that go on in veterinary medicine. Just like human medicine, we're very research-based here. We do a lot of research at the Animal Medical Center. So I think most of our doctors, that's where our recommendations are coming from, like just evidence-based research. And there's actually been a bunch of actual research on CDB out of a couple of universities that show that it improves dogs' discomfort with arthritis, also improves dogs' anxiety, and also actually improves dogs' skin. So I've been recommending CBD for all three of those reasons, most commonly due to osteoarthritis.
What skin problem would it help with? Is it eczema? Like, what would it be?
Dogs don't typically get eczema, but very commonly dogs get like allergic skin disease, like, or atopy secondary to environmental allergies. That's the most common thing that we see in our pets. And it's been shown to be helpful for those patients.
How would that manifest? Like, how would I know if my dog or cat has something in their skin? If they're not arthritic and they're not anxious, but they're itchy, scratchy, and they have patches of fur missing, like what's, and they don't have fleas?
1,000%. So licking excessively, especially their paws or forelimbs. And then also changes to their skin if they've had skin infections or pyoderma diagnosed at the veterinarian before. But really, it's just, it's itching. And it could be all the time, all year, or it could be seasonal, depending on your dog, just like in people who have allergies. Some people have allergies all the time, and some people just get them seasonally. But that is, if your dog is itchy, it is most likely allergic disease, either to the environment, which is more common, but it also could be to food as well.
Well, where I live in Vancouver, it's spring now. And sometimes when you go down the street, the cherry trees and magnolias, the cedar and the birch and all of it, the juniper, it's all going at once. And you'll see it in the air. It's like confetti. And it's landing on the pets and they're walking through it and they're breathing it in. So I think you do yourself and them a favor if you brush them all off before they come in the house. Because they're going to bring it in and they're going to have to lick it off and sit in it and bring it all over the house. And I know it's pretty, but you don't want that in your house for the next person who comes in who's allergic, especially. Okay, we're going to go to break and come back. And I have a recipe and maybe you can tweak it a little bit. I don't know. But if you're looking for a recipe for a dog chew, I've got an easy one to bake. And maybe Dr. Fox can add a spice or two to make it better. All right, stay tuned to Animal Party on Pet Life Radio.
Has your dog or cat chewed through yet another set of sheets?
I get it. I've been there. But instead of replacing them with more scratchy, low-quality bedding, why not treat yourself to what Oprah and Kris Jenner sleep on every night? It's called Cozy Earth. And yes, it's as dreamy as it sounds. Their bamboo sheets and pajamas are buttery soft, cooling, moisture-wicking, and they actually get softer every time you wash them. I'm talking next-level snuggle mode here, folks. These sheets have been on Oprah's Favorite Things list 7 years in a row, and there's a reason why. Cozy Earth gives you the softest, coolest sleep of your life. And just for Pet Life Radio listeners, I scored you an exclusive 41% off. That's the biggest discount they offer anywhere. Just use promo code PETLIFERADIO at CozyEarth.com and sleep like the celebrity your pet already thinks you are. That's CozyEarth.com, promo code PETLIFERADIO. You'll thank me at bedtime.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Hello, we're back on Animal Party Pet Life Radio. We've got Dr. Fox here, and we've been talking all about an animal emergency. And before I give you the recipe, yes, it's kind of like the last one I gave you, but there's an extra ingredient, so your dog will taste that. A good ingredient, pumpkin. So stay tuned for that. Before I give you the recipe, I just want to know, from your experience in emergency, and maybe when they come in an emergency, they're docile, but maybe it's their second visit that lets you answer this. What is the toughest pet to treat in an emergency situation?
This is very easy. It's an angry cat.
Angry cat wins. Okay.
Oh, I'll take an angry dog over an angry cat any day.
And and how do you deal with it? I have trouble just giving my cat a bath or a flea treatment or all the things that are so darn easy with all of my dogs are just like, ugh, I don't want to do it with the cat.
Yeah. So it's a lot of things. So a lot of times people who know that their cat gets upset at the vet, they're prepared. So really what's a great thing, and I think has been used a lot more recently, is to give your cat like gabapentin, which is a pain medication, but also great for anxiety in cats. And a lot of people are using it prior to veterinary visits. And it really helps us handle the cat much more safely. But it also allows your cat to, you know, have a much more pleasant veterinary visit. So it's great for your cat. It's great for us. So if you know that your cat has anxiety with veterinary visits or can become aggressive at veterinary visits, speaking to your general practitioner about prescribing gabapentin prior is such a great and easy thing to do, and it makes everyone's life easier. However, because I'm seeing a lot of cats come in emergently and people don't have time to medicate their cat prior, or maybe they're too sick to do that.
Right.
We usually use, very careful handling here. All of our handlers are extremely well trained with that. And then we use a lot of, towels and very trying to minimize their fear.
Do you have those white ceiling tile rafters in your place?
No.
Because almost every clinic I used to work at had a story of a cat escaping to the rafter.
Oh, no. Thank God. No, we do not have that. We try to be very, very careful and use fear-free techniques with our patients. But sometimes we do have to use medical sedation.
Like, okay, tell me what this sound means.
Yeah, that means what? That means be careful. Watch out. It's coming. But it also is like some cats are talkers and some cats. It's just a lot has to do with experience and just knowing, how these animals act when they feel like they're in a threatening situation. But I think, again, like here, we're very good at dealing with them. And there's never been a cat that I feel like I can't at some point examine or control. But a lot of the times we have to sedate them.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I did have an email question came through to me, but I'm going to give it to you. And the guy said, when I give my cat catnip and I got it growing in my garden, it's spring, it's going to start growing again. When my cat has access to the catnip, this is what he says. My cat gets super hyper, runs around a bunch, and then falls asleep, always in the same place. So maybe I should give him catnip before I take him to the vet. What do you think?
Yeah, you can do that. You can totally, if your cat has a very stereotypical, repeatable reaction to catnip, and that's how you can totally do that. I don't know how, I think catnip's very short acting. So
a few hours.
So I think it's possible that by the time your cat's at the vet, it may have worn off.
And now he's stoned and awake. Great.
But I think, catnip's a very safe, sometimes fun thing for your cat to play with. It depends on the cat and their reaction to it. Because some cats can get very hyper, or some cats can be very tired. Some cats can be very playful or loving. It depends.
And some cats, it's a combination of all of that. And you never know which you're going to get or for how long. So they become the love muffin and then they attack your leg or because they think it's something else.
Exactly. It's usually not super reliable, but I think if that's all you have, then I don't think it can hurt.
So what about the sprays people use? Calming sprays, feel away, this kind of thing before a cat visit, during a cat visit, in the carrier, in the car. Is any of this workable or good?
Yeah, I think pheromones like feel away, they can't hurt. I can tell you that I've rarely seen a truly aggressive cat be completely normalized with feel away. Their pheromones, those chemical signals that animals release, and they can be calming. And I think a lot of veterinary practices will have the plugins in their home. But I think it's sort of one out of several things that you can do to try to make your cats comfortable out of that. I don't think it should be the only thing that you can do,
But the way you take your dog, right? You're going to Starbucks. It happens to be next to your vet clinic or whatever. So you take your dog, even though you weren't planning to, and you go to Starbucks and you bring him in and go to the vet and gets a biscuit and you leave again. Okay, that's all great. You don't really do that with your cat, right?
Yeah, that's why cats, I think,
you shouldn't really. It's not like that's going to help.
No, totally. Socialization
bring
in dogs.
It's not going to get the treat. It's not going to like being there. The more you go, the more it's going to think it might be there that you're going. I don't really think it works with cats the same way. Do you think it would, over time, or if they had enough visits where nothing happened? Or no, not really.
I mean, it depends on some cats are totally fine at the vet and do great and actually like routine veterinary visits because a lot of the times they'll get churro or get a treat and get a lot of pets. And I think it's very, very much depends on the cat. I think people who know that their cat comes to the vet and becomes aggressive every time, unless they're super sick, that's what's going to happen versus most cats.
Most just hide, right? They just want to.
Yeah, to me, they're very handleable at the vet. So it's very animal dependent, just like kids at the pediatrician.
Is it okay? But kids at the pediatrician or kids at the swimming lesson, sometimes it's better when the owner leaves. Is that true?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, first, it depends on the animal. So, and I think most owners are very honest for the most part about my dog does better without me here, or my dog vet does better with me here. And I usually just go with whatever they they say, you know, they know their animal best. So like it very much depends on that. A lot of the times, truly, they do better without their owner, I find.
Well, I think that's partly because the owner's so upset or worried.
And yeah, they feed off on that.
For you, you're not worried or upset if you know the pet's going to be okay. So
yeah, I'm rarely worried or upset. I've been doing this for 15 years, so it takes a lot to get me there. But yeah, I usually find it's just easier, quicker a lot of the times without their owner. But I also want to respect the owner's wishes. So it's whatever they want.
Okay, so here's the recipe, everybody. And maybe, doctor, maybe you can add a spice or two to make it better. This is a chew. If you want to bake your own chew, I'm going to ask the doctor about her recommendations for food after this. But here we go. Peanut butter pumpkin chews for dogs. You take a cup of canned pumpkin, and it can't be the sweet or spicy kind, just plain canned pumpkin. Half a cup peanut butter. Again, not sweet, not diet, nothing, just natural peanut butter. Okay. And a cup of any type of flour that you like. Now, this recipe calls for a teaspoon of cinnamon, but you could substitute for something else. And you mix it all together and you bake it like we did the last time, 350, 20 minutes or so, till they look right. You kind of make them into log shapes. You bring them out and you got dog chews. So what would you add to that to make it healthier? Have you got any suggestions?
I mean, that sounds delicious. It sounds like I would like that. Let me think. I don't know. Cinnamon's good. You could, if you have like a probiotic powder, you can add to that. That Ooh. Might be also a benefit that you can get online. A lot of them come in powders or capsules that you can open and put in that. I think that's maybe something that, you know, they wouldn't taste, but could be beneficial.
Okay, so tell me about the foods. I mean, it used to be people just fed their dog scraps, then people fed kibble with scraps, then people were told only kibble, then people started doing raw, then there's this frozen raw. Now, there's so many variations on this. What do you think people should be feeding their dogs and cats?
I feel very strongly that their dogs and cats need to be on a well-known commercial brand dog food, whether that be kibble or like a wet food, doesn't matter. You can do a combination of both. I personally give my dog a combination of both rather than any sort of very boutique-y diet. I think I never, ever recommend feeding a raw diet. And if you find a veterinarian that does, I think you should maybe rethink visiting that veterinarian. There are much more negatives to feeding raw diets than there are no benefits proven for those diets, and they can be very dangerous for your pet and also for you. And I'm very into research and veterinary medicine, nutritionists being a part of, you know, the making of food and being involved in that, and feeding trials that these big corporations are able to do and make sure that their food is safe. And
I want to ask you specifically about the recent no grain trend, and then it was discovered that it might cause heart problems. So, I mean, all these things, if you're dealing with a good brand, they're going to figure this out and test it. But where do you stand on that? No grain?
Yeah. So you should not be feeding your pet a grain-free diet. Your dog, cat needs grain. And what we've been finding over the past several years, and the research is very much ongoing, is that grain-free diets we're finding a lot of a specific type of heart disease called dilated cardiomyopathy or DCM in dogs that are being fed grain-free diets over long periods of time. And DCM is a disease that we recognize in dogs fairly often, but they're usually very specific to different breeds like Great Danes. Large breed dogs are just more prone to developing DCM. Cocker Spaniels develop DCM, you know, and we sort of expect it in certain breeds.
Is it deep-chested dogs like Greyhounds and Poodles deep-chested or no?
Yeah, you can see it in standard Poodles, mostly large breed dogs. And yeah, I guess large breed dogs typically will have deeper chests.
If someone has a bag of no grain food, they don't have to throw it out. Could they just give it to their dog with rice, or is that not good?
I would mix it in with a grain inclusive diet if they don't want to waste the bag of food.
So buy a good quality grain inclusive bag and just go half until you've used it up or something like that.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah. And again, this is something that happens over time, typically months to years. So, you know, if you fed your dog a grain free diet for like a week or two, that's not going to do it. It's something that happens and develops over time. But we've been seeing that disease in dogs that we wouldn't expect it. And what we found is that all of these dogs are on grain-free diets. What's good is that if you put them on a grain-inclusive diet, it's typically a disease that can be reversed diet, but it is something that where usually it, when it comes to breed associated disease, it's not a reversible disease. It's only something that we can treat with medication and monitor over time, but it's usually chronic and progressive. But we found that with switching their diet back, and that also sort of proves that it's secondary to the diet as well, which is interesting. But there's a bunch of research going on exactly what is it in the grain-free diets that is the problem. And, you know, I think we're getting more information with the research that's being done at a bunch of different universities. But it is something that I think a lot of consumers aren't aware of. And because grain-free is so popular and like for people, I think a lot of the dog food companies, you know, are marketing it as being beneficial to your pets, but it's not.
Oh, tell me about it. Like when they color the food for dogs and cats, like the dog or cat cares what color the food is. You know?
Yeah, it's very much
or the shape,
the
like
client.
It's stars and circles and different colors for my cat. Do you think the cat cares? No, they don't. Anyway, okay. So I really appreciate what you've been saying today. You've given us so much helpful advice. And I was going to talk to you about avian flu, but we've run out of time. So I hope you'll come back on a future show and we can talk more about diet and maybe some avian flu information.
Sure. I'm happy to. Thank you so, so much for having me.
Oh, it's been so good, Dr. Fox. And well, we've been talking to Dr. Fox from the Swartzman Animal Medical Center in New York City. They do a lot of great work. It's a teaching hospital. So if your dog or cat has benefited from something state-of-the-art recently, it might have been developed there. So you owe them a little gratitude. And me too. Thank you, Dr. Fox. It's been a great show. From me, Deb Wolf, and Animal Party and Pet Life Radio, be good to your animals. Ciao, meow.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.